we segregated into three components. First was like the auto pause, or like if we need to pause any DAG or task, previous DAG. Second was the data storage and creation layer. And the third was the data transfer and push layer. So let's say there was a DAG run failure now, and we re-triggered that DAG after 10 minutes. So we know that the data storage and creation layer is not impacted. So the data would be with us at future time also.
You're listening to the Data Flowcast, where we unlock the secrets of mastering airflow for data engineering and AI.
Welcome to the Data Flowcast. I'm your host, Marc Lamati, and today I'm super excited because I'm joined by Samyak, Senior Data Engineer at 99acres. How you are doing, Samyak?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me here.
It's a pleasure. It's a real pleasure because today we are going to discuss quite a lot of topics that I'm sure the audience, the listeners will be very happy to hear about, because we will discuss how to transform Airflow from a workflow scheduler into a powerful self-service platform that handles thousands of dynamic tags, enabling non-technical teams to launch data pipelines and marketing campaigns while automatically tracking their ROI. So, can we start with maybe a little bit of your background? Like, you know, how did you start your journey with Airflow? Why and where are you at today?
Yeah, so currently I'm working as a senior data engineer at 99acres. Currently, my responsibilities include like maintaining and developing the ETL and ingestion pipelines, and maintaining the data accuracy and its availability across the platform. So talking about my journey, starting with Airflow, like when I joined as an intern, I was in data domain itself. So I was interning as a junior data engineer. And I started, like, my first task itself was to debug a pipeline, like the ingestion pipeline, which was scheduled using Airflow. So I had to debug and resolve some issues on the sanity amendment on which the pipeline was built. And at the first moment, it was just like a totally new thing. I didn't have any idea on which tool I was working, on which technology I was working. And actually, I thought my manager wanted me to understand by myself, like what all these things are. So I just deep dive into the logs. I just saw the button of logs on the Airflow UI. And I just clicked it. And I was just like into an ocean. I was diving into an ocean because actually it was a Spark job. And all the Spark logs were there. And I didn't have any idea about Spark Word itself at that time. So I started searching a little bit. At first, I saw the documentation. I started with the Airflow documentation. Then I started watching some YouTube videos. Then I found your videos on YouTube, which was very quite explaining in depth. So I started watching those videos. I would basically recommend the new joinees to start learning from there. And then I did the certifications. There are Airflow certifications of fundamental, and then DAG authoring was there. So I moved on the journey using that. Then I started implementing those things practically into my task, like day-to-day task. Then later on, I was also invited in the Airflow Championship program. And after that, now I am here, yeah, talking with you in the Data Flowcast.
That's awesome. And I guess, like, what do you do today as a senior data engineer at 99acres? Can you tell us more about your role today?
So basically, as I told, like, our work is maintaining the data infrastructure components in our platform. And I am mostly involved in the, like, development and enhancement of self-serve portal and other things also as well. Yeah.
So I guess, like, how does it work? Like, do you have Airflow accessible to everybody in your company or in your team? Or did you build something to, you know, make Airflow as a self-serve portal? Like, did you build something like that? Or
yeah, so basically currently I don't think all the teams are using Airflow.
But we have built some portals that internally uses Airflow, but it is a black box for them. They don't know how it is internally working. And they just have their use cases, which is done at our end. And they have a UI through which they can trigger and hit our APIs. And their work is done for them.
Okay, so it's like how is it exactly? Like it's a UI that you built on top of Airflow, and they only have access to that UI, and then they can pick some requirements, or like how does it work like that?
Okay, so we have basically API endpoints over which they can hit using some parameters. We have a set of parameters that they can use for different use cases. And we have provided them with the documentation, like what all use cases you can trigger and hit this API with the required input parameters. So the input request should be in that format that we provided to them.
Got it. And those use cases, they are predefined, right?
Yeah, they are refined for now because we can't create an open-ended framework or API for them.
Makes sense. Okay. So just to summarize, and let me know if I'm wrong here, Samrak. So you have this UI that you built, then you have this internal API that you built as well that interacts with Airflow, or do you use the Airflow REST API between the UI and...
We basically create dynamic DAGs at the backend, and Airflow is set up on a separate node. It is not used, like there is no REST API input or output usage. And we basically create the dynamic DAGs, and the Airflow going forward handles it based on the code in the DAG file.
Okay, I see. I see. So you generate DAGs dynamically based on user inputs.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting approach. I think it's actually pretty common to have like, you know, this usage of dynamic DAGs, like based on user inputs. Some people use YAML files, some others use, you know, like config files. I mean, it depends. But I guess, could you share some of the challenges maybe that you faced with, you know, those dynamic DAGs and how you solved them? If you got any challenges when you implemented those dynamic DAGs?
Okay. So basically, they could be like many use cases which can extend further in the future. So basically, first we limited those use cases to the templates, like this should be the input request fixed and the user can pass these only. And then we have parameterized templates at our backend in which we have parameterized all the components of the Airflow, like the tasks are parameterized, start date, end date, and schedule interval. All these things are parameterized. And at the runtime, we create and fill in those gaps in the Airflow DAG template. And the final DAG is generated using that. So the thing was like the main challenge was to like restrict and narrow down the approaches that we should provide. So we restricted that based on first, like the template is fixed. Then inside that, like the features are fixed. So going forward, let's say there are new requirements of new features. So we can't keep on creating like new templates or a new feature. So basically what we did in the backend, we developed those features in the Python itself and we have parameterized the functions. So the same function can be used with the different parameters within that functions. So we built the features there but the trigger point would be same. Only just the parameters would increase or decrease and the type of that could change. So that way we restricted and narrowed down the approaches of the users so that it could be used everywhere in all the use cases.
That's very cool. And I guess I imagine that you have many, many DAGs, right? Like how many DAGs are we talking about? Roughly.
So currently we had more than 1400 DAGs at a moment. But the thing is they keep on getting created and deleted as per the use cases because the user can create new DAGs and delete new DAGs. Let's say on an average, basically like 9200 DAGs can be deleted and recreated the next day. So yeah, that keeps on going.
Okay. And I guess that did you have to implement any strategies, you know, for managing that growth? Or maybe like, did you have some challenges as well as you get more and more DAGs and tasks running? Did you face any issues?
Yeah, like as the scale grows, like there are many challenges. So the basic thing was like we had to decide like this can't be a manual effort. Everything and every components need to be automated within a system. So from starting from creating the DAG, like scheduling part, the cleanup part, everything needs to be automated. So basically we deep dive and analyzed all our components that were required. And then we started building each of the components based on our approaches. So like we also segregated the part into some layers. Like let's say there is a separate data creation or storage layer. Then there is a separate data transfer or push layer. So that like when we started building this, it was just a single task or a single Python script that runs all the components. But later on, we realized, let's say there are some failures. We added fault tolerance features for that. And in that architecture, it would be very easy for us to segregate all the components and handle at that step itself, like which step fails. Instead of triggering the whole DAG itself, we are triggering only that step which had failed. So basically, we segregated into three components. First was like the auto pause, or like if we need to pause any DAG or task, previous DAG. Second was the data storage and creation layer. And the third was the data transfer and push layer. So let's say there was a DAG run failure now, and we re-triggered that DAG after 10 minutes. So we know that the storage, the data storage and creation layer is not impacted. So the data would be with us at future time also. So we don't need to rerun and recreate the data. We just need to push that data to the end user. So we segregated those layers. And then like the cleanup part was there. We deep dive into the cleanup architecture also. Like in Airflow, basically we have, I think, 4 default cases through which we can clean up. One was the metadata cleanup, and we can provide the timestamp through which we can clean. Or there is a REST API through which we can delete the DAGs. And or the like the CLI component is there through which we can delete. So yeah, all those things we did.
That's cool. So you have implemented multiple approaches to scale your DAGs. But I guess like one question to you is, you know, a journal version code that obviously listeners weren't there. You talk about this ROI tracking thing, because as you are like, as users are creating, generating more and more DAGs, you need to track the costs associated to those DAGs. And I think like this is actually super interesting. Like I imagine that many people are wondering, like, how do you track costs associated to your DAGs? So can you tell us more about that? Can you tell me more about your approach and if you have built anything yet regarding that?
So yeah, we are basically tracking the cost, that is the execution cost of our sensor portal also. Let's say the user has triggered a use case for running some queries and building that data and transferring those data to their Kafka. So basically we are monitoring the queries also, like which are being run through that portal, and we are getting the cost analyzed also, like how much TB scan that query is doing on Athena, AWS Athena. And let's say a query is triggered and it is taking a lot of scan. So currently as AWS Athena cost us like $5 a TB. So there was a use case when we found multiple queries running, like let's say some campaigns were running, like push campaigns were running on Android and iOS, but those were taking a lot of scan. And we found that on monthly level, it was taking around 1400 TB scan on Athena.
Okay.
That cost us $7,000 a month. So we got to know that, and we slowly migrated all those things, which were possible to Spark pipelines.
So using that, we were directly getting the data from transactional DB instead of the AWS Athena querying. And we like told the end users, like, you can use these Spark pipelines instead of triggering these jobs. And we got to save like $7,000 a month after that.
Good way.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just like, so is it, I guess you are still building this solution, but for finding costs, do you do that automatically or is it still a manual process today?
Yeah, currently it's not a manual process. Basically, we have started creating some alerts on the queries that is being run. So what we can do is, like, on AWS Athena, we can track all the queries. We can get the query ID and the data like scanned using that query. So we generate the CSV files where we get the cost and the query IDs, and also we are tagging. So from whichever portal that query is being triggered, we are tagging that query with that tag. Like, it is triggered from this Salesforce portal or any other portal. So whenever there is a high cost of that query, basically we get an alert on our team's channel. Like, we have this query running from this user or this portal, which is incurring this much cost.
Okay. I guess, like, I think you mentioned at some point that you optimize the cleanup process using different techniques for your DAGs. Could you share more about, you know, this optimization journey and, you know, and its impact? And why did you have to do that?
Okay. So basically, by default, as I mentioned earlier, like, in Airflow, we can clean up the metadata using the metadata DB cleanup from this timestamp. Or the use case, it is like vNet is running. We need to delete a specific DAG, not like the whole meta DB from a specific timestamp or like the whole DB. So we need to delete some specific DAGs from its origin, from its REST API. On the UI, we have delete option. But what we found, like, when we delete multiple DAGs at a moment, let's say we trigger 100 delete operations at a moment, what it does internally, it was like triggering some queries, but it used to slow down our web server UI, like, if so much queries are running at a moment. Also, once we found a deadlock condition, like, if we were triggering so much delete commands at a moment, so we started to deep dive what is Airflow doing internally that is causing these things. So we enabled binlog over that MySQL server to analyze all the queries that API is triggering at the internal MetaDB tables. And we got all the order and all the queries in which these were deleting. Like, let's say there are 10 MetaDB tables and it was running delete queries over each table in a specific order. So when we analyzed those queries, we found, like, it was running a query with like statement. So, like, it was running delete from this table where DAG ID equals to the DAG ID or DAG ID equals to DAG ID dot percentage. So, like, we thought, why is it like the Airflow doing like that? So when we found the approaches, like, if there are sub DAGs, internally Airflow stores this DAG ID as parent DAG ID dot the sub DAG task ID. Like, when we run a delete command, it has to delete the parent DAG and the sub DAG also. That is why it was running the query with like statement DAG ID dot percentage, so that all the sub DAGs also could be deleted at a moment. Like, if we run at that scale, like, it could cause deadlock or like some load over the server. So what we did, we analyzed all the queries and we already knew, like, what would be our DAG IDs, and we didn't have multiple sub DAGs for our campaigns over this. So what we did, we optimized and specifically provided the specific DAG ID and the task IDs within those queries. So all the queries were static and, like, it was a direct query. There was no like statement. So it optimized that, and, like, our web server was very fast now compared to earlier, and we didn't face any deadlock issue after that.
This is so cool. I mean, that's why I love this podcast, is because I keep learning, and this is something that I absolutely did not know. So just to summarize, and let me know if I'm wrong here, but as you have more and more DAGs running, as you said, right, those DAGs are added to your platform and then they are removed. And because you have many DAGs that you need to remove, at some point it doesn't scale. And so that's why you had to find those optimizations, because it was impacting the Airflow UI, right?
Yeah.
And also, I imagine the cost of all the requests that you had to do on your database.
Yes.
That's awesome. I didn't know about that. So that's cool. So one question though, like why do we have to remove those DAGs? Like why they could just be, you know, I don't know, paused and that's it. Like why do you have to remove them?
There are multiple use cases. Let's say there is a marketing campaign. We have real-time campaigns also. Let's say a user landed onto our website and there needs to be a promotional campaign. Like we get the real-time data in NRT tables and they need to trigger a campaign. But that is a one-time campaign. So they got the data using that query. The data is created and the data is pushed, and the end user, whatever campaign they need to trigger, they have triggered using that data. But there is no role for this campaign now. It was one time an ad hoc campaign. So it doesn't need to be scheduled further.
I guess like now, based on more experience, you know, building and scaling your Airflow, for instance, what features would you love to see implemented in future versions of Airflow?
So let's say there are multiple users for our self-service portal. So basically we are tagging them, like adding the tags into the Airflow DAG, like from where we got this. And we are also expecting the owner email ID, like which person has triggered, and like the ownership of this DAG should be of that user. But all this needs to be implemented at our end. Like if the Airflow itself provides something to decide the ownership based on the parameters, like this DAG is owned by this team or this user, then we don't need to maintain all these things at our end.
That's a good one. So today you are using tags for that?
Yeah, we are using tags and we have owner emails through which we can segregate and like also trigger the alerts. If there is a failure, the end user should know like this campaign has failed because of this reason. We provide the step, like at which step the campaign failed, and like the reason also, so that if there is a mistake in, let's say they have mistriggered an incorrect query, so they can check at their end itself so that our involvement is not there.
Okay, interesting. And one very last question. Do you find Airflow difficult to start with, to learn?
I didn't found it difficult. I found it interesting to start with. So in the starting, it was like multiple things were there, like the architecture part. I started with the architecture part. But as soon as I started watching the videos and going forward with the certifications, there was interest getting built up. Like, why is this thing happening and why they are not using this? In this case is like when I found was running inside the queries. So there was a curiosity, like, why are they using like statements inside the queries? So we should know the logic, why it is working and why it is not like that, and it is working like this. So yeah,
I love what you just said. I think honestly, I think as engineer, the most important thing is to be always curious. Like even if you find the solution, it's always interesting to know why does it work that way, because that's truly when you learn. So I love that. I agree with you. Curiosity is so important in our job. Awesome. Well, Sanyak, I mean, the time went so fast, I have to say. So thank you so much for joining. But I guess one very, very, very last question to you. What is the best way for folks to get in touch with you? You know, if I want to, you know, I don't know more about you and what you're doing.
Yeah, they can surely connect with me on LinkedIn platform. I'll be available.
Okay, so Sanyak Jain.
Yeah.
I can find you on LinkedIn. Awesome. Perfect. Well, again, thank you so much, Sanyak. I hope to see you soon for another episode. And take care. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of the Data Flowcast, Mastering Airflow for Data Engineering and AI. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.